I am so honored to be sharing with you all this morning. Full disclosure, I am in a hotel room in Detroit. I was born in Michigan, but live in Virginia. I'm in the Northern Virginia Intergroup, and my sister is in the room. She's not listening to anything other than me speaking. We're actually attending a funeral this morning of my uncle, and this relates to my share this morning because, and I have to leave at 11. Sorry, I have to leave the work up at 11 because that's when hotel checkout is. So that's sorry to be logging out then and not finishing up the rest of the workshop with all of you. But and this relates to my story, which I'll get into a little bit later, because you know, one of the temptations when I learned about coming to this funeral and planning for it was, oh, well, this is going to interrupt, you know, this sharing this morning is going to interrupt. Oh, I can use this as an excuse not to share this morning, right? And get out of it. But doing service this morning and making my recovery part of this day is important, right? I don't take a vacation from program. My program travels with me. It's a part of my life. Even when I travel, my food plan travels, my program travels, my recovery travels. So traveling is one of my triggers. Hotel rooms are one of my triggers. So actually it's a gift from God that I'm able to share and be sharing here with all of you. And that is, getting a little ahead of myself here, but relapse prevention, right? That no matter what, I give service and I fit my life into program and I make God, other people at the center of my life. So before I get into my share, 15 minutes seemed like a lot of time, but now I'm like, oh my gosh, I could probably talk for an hour. I just want to read this quote that I found in the Members in Relapse OA pamphlet. It says on page one, we all need to be loved and accepted, not because we are abstinent, not because we are at goal weight, but just for who we are. This is especially true of OA members who are still suffering. They have been in program for some time, perhaps for months, maybe even years, but either they have not yet attained abstinence or they are in relapse. When asked what helped them most, people who have gone through this painful experience agree on one thing: being loved and accepted, even when they were compulsively overeating, even when they were falling apart emotionally, even when they felt hopeless and unavailable, was the key to their eventually loving and accepting themselves, and from there, getting abstinent. So I found that, and I just thought it was a fitting start to my share. So just to qualify, I've been in program since February of 2009. I entered at a program shortly after getting married and realizing that marriage was not the solution to all my problems. And suddenly my life was going to be perfect just because I'd found a husband. I have maintained a 43-pound weight loss. I'm not currently at my lowest weight. I've actually gone up and down quite a bit over the years, even in program, which I'll share a little bit about in my story. I've been abstinent since January 1st of this year. I have worked the steps all the way through twice, and I'm currently working steps 6 and 7 through a book called Drop the Rock with my sponsor. So just really quickly, my story. I always was fat as a child, picked on, really just always the fat kid. Growing up, I guess, in a family that always kind of used food just for soothing, and food was always a big part of our celebrations and played at the center of a lot of life and emotions and snacks to soothe feelings. And so fast forward to my oldest brother in 2002, he was very obese. In fact, they had, there was no scale that could actually weigh him. I mean, I think he was over 500 pounds at his heaviest weight. He had weight loss surgery and complications from that, died several weeks after. And that began for me, really the beginning of my binge eating disorder, technically, if you want to call it that. I was always an overeater, but that really began a cycle of dieting. I went to talk to a priest, not blaming the priest. I love my faith and faith tradition. Shortly after he died and said, you know, I'm really having trouble with this, with his death. And he said, well, you couldn't save him. There was nothing you could have done to keep him, to control his eating, or, but what can you do? And what can you do something about? And I said, well, myself, I can control what I do and my reaction to his death. Well, that began dieting for me. And I did super low carb and lost a bunch of weight. And at his burial in April, got a lot of attention for losing weight. Well, that cemented in my brain an unhealthy pattern, right? You get good attention, the better you look, which just cemented in unhealthy messages I had received from, you know, everybody, society, my family, high school, whatever, everything. So just basically fast forward over the years, I went on and off diets and gaining and losing weight and restricting, and then being on very restrictive diets. And then when I went off them, ate as much as possible of all the foods that I thought in my brain I would never, ever, ever be able to have again. And that cycle was so damaging to me. And that's what really cemented in my binge eating. And that is what eventually I think just was so destructive to my soul. But I guess I want to move into now the hopeful part, right, of the story. And that is OA and the solutions and the steps. So I want to first start with relapse, right? So relapse, I found this definition on the OA Silicon Valley, California website. Relapse is defined by a condition where a compulsive overeater returns to destructive eating habits after a period of abstinence as defined by the individual. So when I entered program in February of 2009, I did have abstinence, quite a bit of abstinence early on, but I really, for various reasons, my character defects and just not letting recovery get in deep enough, I really was in denial that, you know, I would have a slip and the slip would turn into relapse, but I didn't think I was in relapse because I never stopped going to meetings. Never, ever, ever once have I left program. I have always gone to at least two meetings a week, but I was in relapse. And still to this day, until I was actually even asked to speak at this very, well, I wasn't asked specifically to speak at this workshop, but this is the one that I saw the options that were still available to speak. And I was like, I think I can speak on that. And I think I can speak specifically to the fact that I was in relapse, but didn't really still to this day have been denying I was in relapse because I was in the food in program. And let me tell you, that was really horrible. I'll share what that was like. And I think that, you know, if there are others out there who have done this, then, you know, I feel like that this is my experience is maybe helpful to others. You know, I can remember being in meetings and having a bag of chips that I was going to eat later in my bag and like closing it up so that no one else could see, right? Did I share at that meeting? No. Did I listen to what was being said? No. Or if I did any of it really sink in? No. So I was in deep denial. I was not being honest with myself. So that's what relapse looked like for me. Now they were short relapses, I'll say, but that was hard, right? Being absent for 2 weeks and then in relapse for a week, or sometimes even being absent for 3 days and being in relapse for a week. So on and off again, on and off again, right? The cycles, right? But always what happened was I made myself get a fresh start chip every single time. And what happened when I did that, when I restarted my absence, people were always welcoming. People were always supportive. And I think that's one of the things that's so important is not only that we are always welcoming to those who are restarting and never judgmental, because it takes a lot of courage to start again, but kind to ourselves too, when we have to start again, whether it's coming back from relapse after 10, 20 years or a day or a week, right? Kind to ourselves and kind to others. That's what helped me, and that's what I see help others. When someone shares in a meeting that they had a slip or that they lost their abstinence, or I think that I know that I get a warm rush when I see how others welcome them back and are loving and kind. So relapse prevention for me looks like HOW, honesty, openness, and willingness. And the honesty is self-honesty. And for me, that meant finally admitting that I am a sugar addict and that wine is sugar. I had to give up drinking wine. Now, I am not working an alcoholic recovery program, but for me, alcohol, specifically wine, lowered my inhibitions. And I always use drinking wine as an excuse to eat. So for me, I had to get honest with myself. What was that that was keeping me from being abstinent? And it was drinking wine. It was sugar. And I didn't want to admit it to myself. Oh no, all the sugar burns out when it ferments, blah, 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 blah. Those are excuses. What did I want? I had to be honest with myself. And I wasn't for years. And so I continue to try to be honest with myself. Honesty about the food, honesty with my husband, honesty in all things, right? I have to practice these principles in all my affairs. I have to be honest about work. When I'm lazy and not doing my work, I have to step it up and make up for lost time on work that I have maybe not 3 minutes. Okay, thank you. Oh my gosh, that did go fast. So honesty, right? Openness. As I mentioned, sharing at meetings. For me, sharing at meetings, even if I don't think that I have something valuable to share, sometimes sharing is super important for me to do, even if I think what I have to say is not valuable, right? And a lot of people, I do this, I've heard others do this, will simply say, I'm speaking to open my mouth, to claim my seat. Sometimes just the verbal act of saying it, right? We are our bodies, right? Just saying it, claiming your seat. I'm Mary. I have the disease of compulsive overeating. Like, that's super important, even if you only share for 10 seconds. So I try to share, I try to have something to say on the topic, right? To add to the share, to the meeting. But so I think being open is important, and being open with our sponsor, right? I talk to my sponsor once a week, and I always, let's say progress, not perfection, right? But I am as open with her as I can possibly be. And that's super important for me, it has been helpful to have a sponsor that I can be completely open with. And it's amazing. The fifth step, huge. The first time I gave my fifth step away, unconditional love to a woman that was amazing. And just so healing. Willingness. I am super willful. Oh my gosh. But taking action inside, super important, right? And choosing to use the steps, choosing to use the tools, choosing to work the steps, right? Making that choice every day. Having that internal change for me is so incredibly important to preventing relapse and to staying abstinent. I want to read a quick quote from the December 18th entry from For Today. It says, weight loss is not what the OA program is about. A normal sized body is a fringe benefit received in the course of reconstructing that which cannot be seen. So we hear all the time in program, it's an inside job. That's and that funny. For me has been true. So is that time?
That is.
Okay. Thank you so much for letting me share. So great to see all of your friendly faces as I scroll through. And I'm so grateful for all of you for being here. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Mary. And next is Joanne.
Hi, everybody. My name is Joanne. I'm a grateful compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. I see a lot of familiar faces. Grateful compulsive overeater and food addict. And I'd like to start with a reading from the Voices of Recovery on Recovery from Relapse from April 7th, page 98. Can you hear me okay? Because I noticed with the audio before, it was a little low. The 10th step begins with the word continued. Our first clue that perseverance is about to become a key aspect of our recovery program. And that's from the 12 and 12, page 84. I have persevered in this program through recovery, slips, and relapses. And somebody asks why I go to meetings when I'm slipping and sliding. I say, because there is no other way. I have been mulishly stubborn many times in my life. The OA program has taught me that stubbornness is about ego. I want it my way. I want to be in control. I've heard the acronym for ego, for easing God out. When I live in ego, I live in fear. My attempts to control are an attempt to wrap up my fears in a tidy parcel. Perseverance, however, is about surrendering to my higher power. I've heard the acronym for God be good, orderly direction. When I surrender, I'm still responsible for the effort, but I leave the results to my higher power. Stubbornness is ego-driven and fear-based. Perseverance is surrender to my higher power and is faith-based. So I've been in OA since April of 1976. I didn't have a large amount of weight to lose, but I was totally out of control. Depressed, feeling like my life was passing me by at 20. I went to work instead of going to college, like a lot of my friends did. And I worked in an office with most people quite a bit older than I was. So I always felt all my life like the round peg in the square hole. Been battling with my weight since I was 8 years old, just to tell you. And the first diet was when I was about 10 to be in my sister's wedding. Okay. Someone in my office with a large amount of weight to lose told me about OA, but the spiritual part scared me. And also at the same time, somebody told my sister about OA, but it was before my birthday and before Easter. And I said, I'm not going to start another diet before, a holiday. And I also was afraid that I was going to have to give up the religion or the faith that I was brought up with. Okay. So that was a big part of that. After the holidays, when I first came in, because this is many, many years ago, it was very strict, gray sheet. You had to do your 30 questions to be a sponsor, food sponsor, which is not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. So I lost 20 pounds. I figured I looked pretty good. And then the holidays, the fall holidays came, right? I was on a workshop a couple weeks ago called Triple Crown, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever. And then I said, I'm not going to, do this over the holidays. So I gained 20 pounds in a few months, it was 20 pounds back. And after the holidays, forget it. Then I came back in OA in February. And I figured, I knew that I missed really something important, working the steps and really the meaning of the fellowship. And I remember going to the Concord. Oh my gosh, there was like a couple thousand people there. It was amazing. And it was very overwhelming, for the convention. Over the years, I realized numerous times, especially when I didn't want to face something in my life. It's always because food was always my go-to. Come from a big Italian family, always food around, a lot of carbs, all that kind of stuff. So I like the acronym for fear, to face everything, and recover. That's not what I did because when I became stubborn and insisted I was going to control it, I was going to be in control this time. No good. Never worked. Progression of the disease to me is that the food stopped working and the guilt and remorse increased every time I binge. Sometimes I'd be absent for a year and I would binge 6 months and I would binge. I know what it means when they say in program that food is the last thing to go. It begins with slacking off on my program, not using a sponsor or not being honest with the one I have. Isolation, big for me. not using the tools like the phone to ask for help, losing my connection with my higher power, not dealing with my feelings like I do when I'm relapsing. Not dealing with my feelings like I do when I'm abstinent by working step 10 and identifying things quickly. That's really important for me today. The things that cause relapse are fear, doubt, self-centeredness, resentment. For me, the worst relapse I had was 9 years ago. I'd gone through a really bad divorce and my mom got dementia and passed away. And I just went into a very bad depression. And I will say that I did go into treatment. That's part of my story. It's not the be-all, end-all. It did help me focus on myself because I'm very codependent, especially with my family. And I went to a 12-step, treatment place because I knew if it wasn't that, it would never work. The scary thing for me at that point was I was just eating because the food was there. Like, it didn't even matter if I was hungry. I just didn't care. And that was really scary. Luckily, I never stopped going to meetings. Okay. I can't imagine how bad it would have got if I stopped going to meetings. I can't even imagine. And, I'm usually honest, even if I'm doing lousy, I'm honest when I'm at a meeting. Okay. And last year I had proof of how insidious this disease is. I've been abstinent almost 2 years. Okay. And all of a sudden, June, I picked up. And then I got right back on. And then July, I picked up. Maybe 2 days, and I got back on. And then in August, and I thought, uh-oh, something. And then October, it was like a full-out, awful, awful binge. And I said, no, this is, scary. So I got a new sponsor. I had to be a beginner again. No, and realized I had never stopped coming to meetings. I had, but I had to start like I was a beginner. Went through the big book again, did my fourth step, everything. So today, actually, I have 13 months of abstinence by the grace of God and the fellowship of this program. Some part of me, oh, please clap for my higher power, not for me. So some part of this program always stays with me. And I always say to people, keep coming back. No matter how you're doing, keep coming back. Because if you leave, we cannot, absolutely cannot recover in isolation. So some of the things that I've learned to help me work my program, I know that I'm a volume eater. Okay, so for me, it's imperative that I weigh and measure my food. That's not everybody, but for me, that's what works. Okay, now I know what my alcoholic foods are. I had a food plan developed by a nutritionist. That's what I do. My sponsor knows what my food plan is. I sponsor, my sponsor is sponsored. That's really important. I actually do not own a scale at this point. And for somebody whose life was absolutely ruled by the scale, that's a miracle. It's a miracle. Okay. Like I said, I've been struggling with my weight since I was 8 years old. So for me, I attend a lot of meetings, especially now that we're on Zoom. I do a lot of service at my group level, my region level, my intergroup level. That's important for me. And I always have done a lot of service. And you know what? Kept me coming back to meetings. When I didn't want to come back and I had the key to a meeting, it was like, oh, I don't feel like going. Guess what? I had to be there, and that was a good thing. I speak to my sponsees almost every day. And from Monday to Friday, one of my sponsees and I share our 10th step with each other. And of course, if I have something comes up, I share it with somebody right away. I have to take my disease seriously. I always have another binge or relapse in me, but I don't know if I have another recovery. Really, I don't know. Because when I go off, it's bad. I'm very black and white. So I'm either abstinent or I'm binging. And that's, there's no black and white. So I think the most important thing for me is to be honest with myself and with my sponsor. I think that, I had to change. I've changed sponsors a lot over the years. And I find like if I can't relate to somebody, no hard feelings. Or if they can't relate to me as a sponsor, that's okay. That's okay. I think if I'm truly being honest with my sponsor or another OA member, I'm not going to relapse. If I keep living in steps 10, 11, and 12, I'm not going to relapse today. because I'm breaking that denial. And that is such a big part of my disease. I've heard it said that if I'm hungry and it's not mealtime, something's going on, you know, or if something bothers me about somebody else, that's about me. You know, it's not about the other person. Okay. And I really, when that food thought comes in my mind, I need to act. Is that 3 minutes? I heard noise, but I didn't know what it was. I don't know if that was the 3 minute. Okay. Was that 3 minutes, Judy? No. Oh, okay. Sorry, lost my place here. When that food thought comes in my mind, like even if it's a fleeting thought, I need to take action. I either need to pick up the phone, you know, text somebody, get on a meeting, something. I need, you know, the tools don't keep me abstinent. My conscious contact with my higher power is what keeps me abstinent by working the steps. But those tools are important. To me, those tools are important. And working with another person, so important, because I can't, you know, I'm told the basic purpose of our program is to reach out my hand to another suffering compulsive overeater. If I'm not doing that every day, I forget where I come from. I really forget where I come from. And so I need to keep working so that I'm giving away what I have. And it's not some jumbled message. You know, I want to not share the mess. I want to share the message. I don't know how long I have left. Three minutes. I'm almost done, if that's okay. I wanted to end with I forgot to share. Okay, I'm maintaining today. I said it's 13 months abstinence today. I'm maintaining between a 40 and 42 pound weight loss by the grace of God and the fellowship of this program. And, you know, I think it's important. It's important to share that. Again, you know, I don't weigh myself except going when I go to the doctors, but I know when I'm abstinent. I mean, I know when I'm doing something crazy with food, and I need to be honest when that happens. You know, for me, even fats can be a problem. It's crazy. So I wanted to end with two prayers. We all know the third step prayer, but these prayers were given to me many years ago. This is the first, what's called the first step prayer. I admit that I'm powerless over my addiction. I admit that my life is unmanageable when I try to control it. Help me this day to understand the true meaning of powerlessness. Remove from me all denial of my addiction. And second step prayer, higher power, I know in my heart that only you can restore me to sanity. I humbly ask that you remove all twisted thought and addictive behavior from me this day. Heal my spirit and restore in me a clear mind. And thank you so much for letting me share. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. And our third speaker is Kathy. Kathy, you're muted.
Just a second. Okay. I have the disease. My name is Kathy. I'm from the Brandywine Intergroup. I just saw a big picture of myself. I live in Drexel Hill, right outside of Philadelphia, and the Brandywine Intergroup. And I first came to program in 1977. I was going in the Army, and that was going to change everything. And I wanted to find a husband. And you know how that works. So I went to a meeting. I thought everybody was crazy. And then I went on liquid jello and had shots. And I went on that and I lost 7 pounds the first week. And then I went to a wedding and I had made the wedding cake because that's the little business that I had, and gained it all back. So I had those problems all through the service, and you know, I come from an Irish, English, German, Swiss, my dad, and my mother was Italian. So we drank and ate. And I just grew up in that milieu, and I thought that's what people did. I had weight problems. I was bullied. Just going through some of that in writing and learning to love myself, and also how much God loves me. And I am a unique creature. I believe he's known about me since creation and decided this time that I would be in this world. So what happened was, finally in 1981, I had gotten married. I had been on a diet before that. And I remember going to find a dress, and I tried it on, and the lady said, "I think you're going to need a section set this particular size." And I said, "Oh, but I'm on a diet and I'm going to be, you know, so order the next size down." And she said, "Well, one never knows." And I wanted to tear her eyes out. And it's like, how dare you tell me I'm not going to do this? And I didn't, you know, I mean, I was on a weigh-in pay, and I kept that until the night before we got married, the bachelor party. He was from New York, and with the bachelor, we were getting married in Philly at my dad, you know, around my dad's at church. And we came back, and I had a piece of the bachelor cake, which I had made. And then the next day, we took the top layer of the cake, and it never got to the first anniversary because we brought it to breakfast Sunday morning before we went on our honeymoon. And between my brothers and my dad and my husband and myself, we ate the whole thing. So it was very good. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It was very good. But I didn't see anything wrong with that, you know, because my history is diet, binge. Oh, I gained weight. How did that happen? Diet, binge. Oh, I gained weight. How did that happen? I was in total denial. So finally, in 1981, we got married, and I thought, well, I'll never want to eat again. And then I did. But this time I figured, well, I was still in Maryland in the service, and he had been transferred out to Illinois. I was going to join him in June. We got married in April. And when I joined him, I would be fine. You know, I wouldn't want to eat anymore. So, but I did hear, I was one day happened to open the Post News, and there was a meeting, and I went to it. And this time it sounded a little bit different than the last time it had. So it was nice, and the people were nice, and I was still eating, but you know, I was a company commander. It was very stressful. I was one of the few the female company commanders back then. There are a lot more now, but I was in the service when only 5% of the entire Army was female. And, but I was blessed with really good sergeants that I'm now so grateful for, because I did not appreciate them at the time. But I have been able to go talk to my top sergeant and thank him for pulling me along. So, then I joined my husband, and I started eating again. Now, the reason for this was because we weren't in our quarters yet. We were in visiting officer quarters. And when we got to quarters, then I was going to be fine. So we got to quarters, and I looked up OA. I didn't go, but I looked up OA. And one night one afternoon, I said to my husband, "I'm going to go to that meeting I was telling you about." He said, "Okay." And then it started to rain, so I didn't go. And the next week, I said, "I'm going to go to that meeting again." And I was ready to leave the house, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to that meeting." He goes, "What meeting?" And I went, I could have gotten away with it, but I went with this big chip on my shoulder. "I dare you. I dare you." I put everybody into compartments. She was this, he was that, da 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 da, because I was either above the fray or I was very, 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 very low. And so I want to keep more track of the time. How much time do I have left, please? Four minutes?
Nine.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay. So don't worry about interrupting me. So I'm going to fast forward. So I came in, I got abstinent, but I was really on a diet. I was on the weigh and pay diet with my husband. And that lasted a little while. And then my cousin, then in February of 82, my sister-in-law was killed in a mountain climbing accident, and we had to drive to Detroit. We were living in Illinois, and we didn't have a lot of meetings, but we had what we had. So, and we took advantage of going to other things, and I started going to intergroup, even though I shouldn't have had, But we went to the funeral, and I remember feeling like, what am I supposed to feel? I met this person twice, because I always looked outward to look at other people for how I should feel. So everybody was dissolved in tears and mourning, and I didn't feel like that. So I thought there was something wrong with me. So we got to the funeral luncheon, and I remember going up once and coming back and eating. And then I went up again, and then I went up again. And when we got back home in Illinois, I called somebody right away. Now, this is probably not what she said, but what I heard her say was, well, we're compulsive overeaters, and that's what we do. And I thought, oh, okay. So I was going to intergroup, which was 50 miles away. I was going to region. I was a region rep. I signed up to do bylaws in the intergroup. I don't think I ever finished them, but I signed up to do them because who else wanted to do them back then? Although now apparently it's a really fun thing to do. And I went to region, and I was working, and this in 1984, I was lying. I mean, all the time I lied at meetings. I lied. I'm absent. So I didn't go to this region meeting. I didn't call anybody to let them know. And I was supposed to do something there that I had volunteered for. And the middle of the week following, somebody called, the region trustee called me, and she said, you know, we were hoping you'd be here. And I said, well, and I, you know, I think I said I had to work. And she said, you know, we were depending on you. And I, so I got off the phone, and I remember walking into the living room. I remember this very clearly, in our quarters. And I said to myself, you can't blame anybody for this anymore. You volunteered to do this. Nobody asked you. And that was my bottom. So that was in the fall, and in November, early December, because we didn't make it home for Thanksgiving, but we came home for Christmas. And we came home for Christmas, and I walked in the house, and I said to my sister, who died in 2017, I told you about this meeting. I'm going to this meeting. And she went with me. She really liked it, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I kept going and going. And I met people that were in recovery. I mean, they had this nice way about them. And one of them was my sponsor. And I would ask you to pray for her, because she's on hospice and she's been my sponsor for over 30 years. And I feel very sad. This is wonderful that I can cry, because I always feel so safe at a meeting that I can cry, because I know that she doesn't have long for this world. But right before COVID, she was in the hospital, and I could go see her. And we sat and we had a wonderful time together. I brought this little book, and I read it to her, and we both cried because it was really sad, but it was really wonderful. And I have that very precious memory. And she just wrote me a note, which I realized kind of is a note of closure. And anyway, so I would appreciate it if you would pray for her. She's from Warminster. Her name is Joanne. And so I started hanging around with people that had this, and I went to a bunch of meetings, and then they announced that there was going to be, well, they announced very quietly because it wasn't supposed to be announced. There was going to be an AWOL, which was called a way of living. It wasn't sanctioned as our, that we finally have one, you know, that is about doing the 12 steps and hoping and wanting to get abstinent and recovery from it. And I started going, and I count my abstinence from April the 4th, 1985. It was my fourth anniversary with my husband. And that's when I put the alcohol down. I come from, that's my, one of my cats, our cats. So anyway, he didn't say anything. Pardon?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. Okay. So what do I do to prevent going back into relapse? Number one, the steps. I had to work them and get them from here. They say the longest journey is from here to here, from my head to my heart. And that has taken a very long time. I went into another program subsequently, and it gave me great compassion for people who have been in our program and can't get abstinent, because it took me 17 years in that program to finally get the message and start to work it rather than go every 5 years and come back and yeah. So that has added a lot to my recovery. I'll tell you about one instance. My husband, this was about recycling. Now, my first husband, I left my first husband. I stayed abstinent. All I did was go to meetings, come home, get up the next day, pack my food, go teach, come home, do the same thing. I had switched schools, and I knew that I had to leave, and I did. And that was heartbreaking. And he died 2 years later of the disease of alcoholism at 55. And 5 years I took to get better, and married someone else who didn't drink, but had a hidden addiction that I didn't know about. And then I kept working my program, going to meetings, talking with my sponsor, working the steps, getting really, really, really close to my higher power. And on page 366, I believe, of the big book, let me find it for a second. Okay, I've heard this a lot, but I never realized where it came from. Somehow, this is 366 in the story called Tightrope. Somewhere I had heard that it is easier to act yourself into a new way of thinking than to think yourself into a new way of acting. And this made sense in the context as acting as if. So I've had to act as if, you know, I wanted to be absent, and act as if I wanted to not be resentful. And on December 27th, my husband walked into this room. I was sitting at the computer making reservations for dinner the next night. And he walked behind me and he said, "Kathy," not in a surprised or alarmed way. And then I heard a thud. I didn't even have time to turn around, and he was dead. He dropped dead. And my sister-in-law was here. I've had a very difficult relationship with her, but I prayed for her for a whole year, and she got a whole lot nicer because my attitude changed. You know, bless her, change me. That's also really important in this program, so that I don't want to go eat over it. And she's a retired nurse. I screamed for her as I picked up the phone to call 911. She was upstairs in a flash. So I have no guilt over whether my husband got immediate help, but he was dead. She walked out of the room when the ambulance people came within a few minutes, and she said, she just shook her head and she was crying, and she never cries. And I was like, no. So I figured they'd get him back, and they didn't. And so I said to my brother and she, after I had sat with my husband for a while and talked to him, told him I was going to miss him and that I loved him. And I had come to love him. Absolutely. And that, okay, and I'll just finish with this. Love is an act of the will. It's not a feeling. I had to do the same thing, act as if I loved him, and then started loving him. And that's the answer. So I'm very grateful and thank you for letting me share.